O-R-G.
All right, we're back, and thanks for joining us on the program this morning. You can always join us on the phone at 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free, 877-291-8255, or you can just be passive. Let me take a moment of your time to remind you about our good friends at Green Mountain Access. If you're looking for an outstanding local internet service provider, make it our friends at GMAVT.net. Why not? Because once you get on the internet, it's kind of a worldwide thing, or so rumor has it. So why not pay people here locally to get you up there? And our friends at Green Mountain Access can make it so easy for you. You just make a phone call, and then they'll do the hard work for you. 1-888-321-0815. And you can find them on the web at gmavt.net. Coming up on the program on Monday, we're going to be talking with the Speaker of the House, Shap Smith. And I'm also looking forward to a discussion that we're going to have with a guy named David Breaux, who is here in Vermont, who is studying compassion. God knows we could use a little bit more of it out there. And what David's been doing is he lives in Davis, California, near Berkeley. And he's been basically standing out on the street since 2009, asking people to give him their definition of compassion. And he's just one of the coolest guys. So I'm really looking forward to our discussion with him on Monday. So that's coming your way next week. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free, 877-291-8255. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning. I'm not sure who we actually are supposed to introduce here. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome to Adam Boyce, who is the man behind Charles Ross Taggart, the old country fiddler, and he's written a book about him called The Man from Vermont. Thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
Oh, good to be here, Mark.
Well, let's get your deal first before we find out Charles's deal. So tell us, what's the story behind the story on Adam Boyce?
Oh, well, it's a fairly short story, not too much. Grew up in Williamstown. Now I live down in West Windsor, and in between then, I've done a lot of fiddling. I started learning from Harold Luce, who passed away just a couple months ago down in Chelsea, and I've always been interested in history, always been liking to go out and talk, and I've been affiliated with the Vermont Humanities Council now for probably 13 years or so, and then also on the New Hampshire side. And how I got started in doing Taggart, I just happened to discover him accidentally by an internet search. I found him. And
what'd you Google to get him?
I was looking for fiddling, fiddling contests I was very much into at the time. And I just found, this old country fiddler. And he had recordings. He made a number of recordings. And I wasn't too impressed, probably because of the quality of the recording, but I kind of put him on the back burner thinking, well, maybe he could become a lecture subject at some point. But then after watching people like Jim Cook doing Calvin Coolidge, I said, that's pretty fun. And I was with George Woodard, did some Groundhog Operas in the past. And I said, this, since I played fiddle, I think I could do this. And so in 2009, I started doing research, and it just kept snowballing from there. I accumulated a lot of information on what was a relatively obscure character. Matter of fact, just the other day, I got a book called Culture Under Canvas, which was the story of the Chautauqua movement. And Taggart was very big in that. He had one paragraph, which I had known about. It might have included in the book, but basically, that he was a real trooper. Regardless of what the room conditions were, the food, what have you, he kept going. The travel conditions were not always ideal. But this was somebody who was a pretty big deal. Matter of fact, he was interviewed on WDEV, according to Martin Bryan. He has a recording of him from sometime in the early 30s.
Wow.
Doing an interview and then going into one of his routines. But basically, Taggart played the fiddle, the piano. He told stories. He was a musical humorist. Probably much the same way Victor Borge might have done things in, combining fine music with humor. But he also was referred to as a quick change artist. He would literally change costumes right in front of his audience and put on fake beard, fake goatee, go into different characterizations. had a very good singing voice, and he made a 43-year career of just doing that. And then I had found the interview that he did in the Vermonter magazine from 1927. And that gave some information, but the majority of information I got was through the Newbury Historical Society, who had an article Taggart wrote well after his professional career, which was submitted to Vermont Life, which somehow didn't make the magazine, but fortunately the Historical Society had a copy, and that had a lot of info. And then my wife and I went out to Iowa 2 years ago by train, which is how Taggart would have traveled, there were about 500 documents related to him from the former Redpath Chautauqua Bureau, which was his primary employer for over 20 years, and some professor there saved all the office correspondence from the Redpath. And Taggart had about two boxes, and we scanned a bunch of documents, and that was a very important piece, the business side. He was a constant promoter of himself, trying to make sure, you know, do you need me for any dates in the coming year? And if not, he would go to somebody else. But and then some salary negotiations. I think at the top of his career in the 20s, he was getting $25 a performance for a minimum of four per week.
Wow.
And he would be doing two contracts, basically, a 15-week Chautauqua and a 10-week Lyceum. So he's getting about $2,500 a year. He put out records with Victor. So he was doing pretty well. He had a certain level of fame, but, you know, in the 21st century, hardly anybody has heard about him except through this book and through the living history portrayals that I do of him.
So when I think of Chautauqua, I think of the Buffalo area down there where they have these conferences. Is that what?
That
sounds like something different you're talking about.
That was the birth of it. What I'm talking about is what was called the Tent Chautauqua or the Circuit Chautauqua, which was a private enterprise. Basically, maybe something similar to the Osher Center for Lifelong Learning. You have subscribers, and when they got it organized, they would have 10 or 12 presenters who would all go together on the same circuit 3 to 5 days in a particular town. They pitched a tent. It was in the summertime. Mostly people came to hear the speakers. Like William Jennings Bryan could get 3,000 to 5,000 people crowding under a tent. And Taggart sometimes did preludes to warm up the audience, if you would, for him. But that was a little better than the Lyceums, where he was just going individually place to place. He had a little camaraderie with some of his fellow presenters and got to listen to other speakers and whatnot. But speakers were the big thing with Chautauqua, but they did tolerate a certain amount of entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Boy, you've gone deep on this guy, haven't you?
Yes, I have. And I'm still finding out information about him. I mean, of course, records are out there. Anybody who collects old records knows the name Charles Ross Taggart. Those are probably the few people who do. And just a few weeks ago, I purchased 19 test records that were only cut on one side. They were for Victor and Columbia. And they must have been his possession. They were not sold to the general public. And most of them never made it to commercial audiences, but one did. But there were bits and pieces. He was a good recycler of material, and I've heard probably close to 40 of his recordings. Conservatively, he made about 50, so there are still a few more I haven't heard. But any that I pick up, I'm donating to the Vermont Folklife Center, and we're hoping to get some of them re-released, because at least when I do my living history portrayal of him, where I dress as him and do some of his routines, some of the more rural audiences I go to still get that humor. People in the bigger cities like Burlington, well, maybe sometimes not so much.
You know those Burlington people.
I know, too sophisticated. But Taggart always claimed he got the best reaction.
Too snobby.
Well, he always claimed he got the best reaction from intelligent audiences. Or he made a comment, he never got the guffaw of the ignorant. But anyway, that was... He had a pretty successful recording career, and he was on radio some, but again, by and large, one-man act, just going out and doing all of these things to try to bring some sunshine or make people forget their problems, if only for one performance.
And we're going to feature some of that music here in just a moment. We're talking with Adam Boyce, who has written about Charles Ross Taggart, the old country fiddler, the man from Vermont. If you have any comments or questions, maybe you remember him. 244-1777, toll-free.
You'd be quite ancient if you did. I've only run into one person who remembered him, and he was a young boy back in the mid-30s. He could remember, he was at visiting his aunt's house down in Wilder, and they said, oh, Mr. Taggart's going to be performing just down the street, so they went down to hear him.
Huh.
And he didn't tell me that till after I performed, so I was a little nervous to see how I compared, and he said, no, you did all right.
That person's no longer with us?
I think he's still around. He was in Newbury. I'm not sure what the gentleman's name was, but very few people. Most of the people I've talked to, it was either their parents might have known him, or their grandparents, or their great-grandparents. But, he hadn't done any performing probably since 1939, I think, was his last official professional performance.
Mm-hmm. Have you gotten better at doing him?
Well, nobody has told me any different, so I'm assuming I have. Of course, when you're dealing with a character that not too many people have seen, it's a little easier to put some artistic license. But, of course, I have heard the recordings. My wife seems to think I do it better than he does on certain things. But, we've gotten the reaction. Even though people know I come and I do him, afterwards, they'll say, you almost became that person. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, that was the entire purpose.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I can't wait to meet your wife someday. Does she put up with this?
Well, I think you did meet it because she took that photo that's still hanging out here.
Oh, my gosh, you're right.
She was almost going to come up today, but it was casual Friday, so she could wear a casual clothes down to Dartmouth College.
So. Okay. So is she all right with your obsession with this?
Oh, well, I have multiple obsessions, and if she was here, she could tell you that.
All right, well, we're just going to stick to this one today.
Yeah, no, she has no problem. But sometimes she has trouble keeping me straight because I have other alter egos.
Oh, God. All right. Superheroes? What are we talking about here?
Well, again, very obscure people. Daniel L. Cady, of course, whose poems were read by the old squire here for years and years and years. He was the original poet laureate before that Robert Frost guy. Ralph Page down in southern New Hampshire, who is sort of referred to as the grandfather or the Contra and square dancing traditions. And I'm kind of exploring doing Snowflake Bentley as a living history character.
Wow.
So
right.
I have several that I'm working on and fine-tuning.
You like to perform, don't you?
Yes. Well, Mr. Taggart is by far the funnest, and he has the fiddle, so that gets me in the door. Most of these other guys didn't play music, so... Because when I said, I'm going to do... Snowflake Bentley, people say, well, how are you going to fiddle in that? And they know I play fiddle. And I was told erroneously that he played fiddle for square dances, but that was not the case. He played the piano for square dances. He never played the fiddle, so I can't work that in.
Huh. All right. Let's hear what Charles Ross Taggart sounded like. We have a CD here. We're going to run the first one.
I think you have cut one, which is probably the most common one of his, the Old Country Fiddler in New York.
All right. Here we go.
I'm going to play old Bonaparte's March over the Rhine. Been in New York. I went down there a while ago, stayed at the hotel. I went up to that clerk and I asked him if I could get a place to stay overnight, and he says, European or American? I says, American, born, raised here, never in Europe in my life. Well, he says, you want a bath? Well, I says, that ain't none of your business, mister, whether I do or not. And go on. I took a bath and changed my clothes just before I left home, but it wasn't none of his business. Well, he says, outside or inside? Well, I says, I usually make a practice taking a bath on the outside. He says, I mean, do you want an inside or an outside room? Oh, I says, well, that's different. I'll take an inside if it's all the same to you. Looks a little mite stormy on the outside. Well, he says, inside will cost you a dollar and outside a dollar and a half. Well, I says, mister, this is the first place I ever struck where I'd keep it stay in the house and tis outdoors. But I stayed there all right, and I stayed on the inside. They gave me a beautiful room. Oh, yes, a dandy. That little fella took me up to it, you know. He was awful polite. He kept poking his head into my door about every 2 minutes. He'd stick his head in and say, did you ring, boss? Ring? No, I says, I didn't ring. You go to bed. Back he come in about a minute and said, did you ring again? Ring again? I says, I ain't rung at all yet. There ain't nothing to ring. You go to bed. You won't be up in time for school if you don't. I couldn't bother with him. I was trying to pick a little white button out the wall of my jackknife I see there. I couldn't pay much attention to him. Say, they had the curiousest lighting apparatus in that room ever I see. All they had for light in that room of mine was a red hot hairpin in a bottle hung up by a string. Well, I couldn't put that thing out to save my life. Blew on it till I got so dizzy I put near fell out the window and turned some water onto it, out the water pitcher, but I couldn't do nothing with it. I finally thought of a scheme, though. They had a bureau there in the room on little wheels, and so I took that bureau and I hauled it right up in under that there lighting apparatus and climbed up into a chair and untied, oh, I guess a half a dozen knots in that string. I let that bottle down and shot up in the bureau drawer. Well, I'll play you Pop Goes the Weasel. I get to talking, telling stories. I forget what I'm doing.
That was Charles Ross Taggart. He's a real cut-up, that dude, huh?
Oh, he is. He is.
Kind of like you, a little sort of dry sense of humor.
Oh, yes.
Fits right with you.
Oh, yes.
Did he have family? What's the story on that?
He was married. He had three daughters. Only one of them had children. They all married, but only one had. And I think out of that, only the one grandson I've corresponded with who's in Las Vegas now, and I think is 76. And he... Taggart and his wife lived with his family after he had retired, and all he knew them as were the old people who lived in the house. He never saw his grandfather as a performer, although his grandfather always told stories at the dinner table that would, he said, give him the shudders, and he was always practicing the fiddle, even though Taggart had a stroke in 1937 that impaired the use of his right hand, so when he had to bow... The bow was strapped on with a loose rubber band.
Wow.
But he said it was something he kept practicing probably right up till the end of his life.
How did he die?
Well, his wife died in College Station in 1950 down in Texas, and they moved up to Kent's Hill, Maine in the summer of 1952, and that's where he spent the last 10 months of his life. His grandson was enrolled at the Kent's Hill School up there. And prior to that, the summer of 52, he visited Topsom in Newbury. They were living in the Lebanon, New Hampshire area. And so he got to see some of the old sites. And he died on the 4th of July, 1953, and buried up there in the in the Reedfield Corner Cemetery. My wife and I went up, just a very plain, flush marker with just his name and years of existence. And the folks up there didn't know anything about him or his significance, but... kind of a sad ending, but, you know, he was pretty philosophical about these sort of things that, you know, you do your thing and you move on. And that's what he did as a traveling entertainer, you know, to bring some joy. It brought him some joy, some more than others. Some places are a little kinder than other places, but basically he felt his life was a success. And so by any measure, that's the definition of an American success story.
You know, it always fascinates me, Adam, what draws people to certain things. I mean, it's almost, do you believe in fate? Do you think
that absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Of course, it wasn't what you call love at first sight. It took a little while, but the more I got into him, you know, this was a topic since he didn't have a book already about him, it was something that needed to be written. And luckily, and it was not self-published, which was one of his pet peeves that, you know, people got after him in the late 20s and 30s. He should write a book. And he wasn't too keen on the idea, but fortunately the History Press approved it, and it came out just about a year ago. Matter of fact, just a couple days after I got books, I gave a performance in East Topsham at the very hall where Taggart started his career in 1895.
Yeah.
So that was pretty special.
And I think you can actually see that. I think that's up on YouTube.
I think it
is.
Might be. Yeah. I'm not sure who was recording it. There is a clip of Taggart himself from around 1924 in an early talking movie. That was 3 years before The Jazz Singer came out.
So why is it even important we know about this guy?
Well, he's an important link in our cultural past. You know, here you have somebody who was, as he called, very unsettled as a young man. He couldn't figure out what he wanted to do with his life. He has these talents. He gets limited amount of training, not a huge amount. He attends, you know, like the New England Conservatory and Emerson School of Oratory, now Emerson College, but he just attends. He only there for maybe 3 months each. But he has this, you know, this abiding passion and drive to show his talents. And obviously he found he wasn't going to be doing it just in Old Topsham or Newbury. He was going to have to travel. And, you know, for me, this was just a very important piece, as one reviewer of the book said, that could very well, very easily been washed away from the memory of the state. Because, you know, how many people, you know, collect old Vermonter magazines or collect old records? And they may or may not know the name, or may just know him as this little tiny footnote in the Chautauqua movement. But he was certainly very well known in his time. And, you know, I'm always for, you know, going after something that nobody else does. And hopefully some other people will re-examine him and maybe give him the credit he deserves.
We're almost out of time here. Any shows coming up you're doing?
I'm going to be a week from Saturday in East Craftsbury, at the Presbyterian Church at 7 p.m. And then the end of the month, October 26th, I'm in Randolph Center at 2 p.m. And that's for the Randolph Historical Society. And then middle of next month, I'm in Essex.
Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you.
Good luck.
Okay.
Adam Boyce is the man behind Charles Ross Taggart, the man from Vermont. That's going to wrap it up for hour number one. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier.
AP Radio News.